On this week's episode of Work Trends, we're talking people data with LinkedIn's Kate Hastings. Welcome to the Work Trends podcast from Talent Culture. I'm your host, Megan Ambiro. Every week, I interview interesting people and brands who are reimagining work. For more information, be sure to check us out at talentculture.com and join us live on Twitter every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern using the hashtag WorkTrends. Today's guest is Kate Hastings. She is the Senior Director of Insights at LinkedIn, and she's here to tell us why the world of people analytics is more powerful than ever. Welcome to Work Trends, Kate.
Thanks, Megan. Very excited to be here.
So let's dive right in, Kate. Tell us what you do at LinkedIn and how you work with HR teams.
Yeah, I lead our insights team, which is part of our sales organization. And so what the team does is we analyze LinkedIn data to help our customers make better decisions. And a big piece of that, as you can imagine, is around talent decisions. But we also support marketing decisions, sales decisions, learning decisions. So across all of our lines of business.
Oh, that's very interesting. And what led you to this career? I know that's a huge question, but I think there's so many people that want to dive in and want to learn more about how they can do this in their own career.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really funny. I remember the funniest thing that was so inspiring about this career for me is I saw a job description, and not many people get inspired by job descriptions, but there was a role for people analytics at Gartner. And I had been in management consulting for a period of time and was ready to move on to try something else. And I saw this job description that talked about using an organization's data to make better people decisions and how important that was to the overall corporate strategy and bottom line. And I was so inspired just because I felt like this was an underused opportunity for analytics and felt like I could bring kind of that analytical mindset that I had to the things that I really care about, you know, making a great work experience for people, making them more productive, making the company more successful through its people. So I always laugh when I think about being inspired by a job description. We spend a lot of time thinking about kind of how to improve job descriptions, maybe even how to eliminate job descriptions.
Right.
But that one for me really resonated.
What was it about the job description that resonated for you?
You know, I think I know so much about applying analytics and data to making finance decisions or making sales decisions or, you know, overall corporate strategy and prioritization. And I felt like there was an opportunity to better use data in thinking about people decisions. And when I had thought of HR and worked with HR in the past, that hadn't been the most data-driven part of the organization. And I felt like there was really an opportunity to bring that data mindset and make better decisions for everyone and that everyone would benefit. Laszlo Bock, in his book, Work Rules, talks about how he was going into people analytics and into HR. And people would say, well, people with your kind of analytical approach don't really go into HR. And he was sort of like, that's the point. This is the opportunity.
Yeah. And I think so many people are also on that same wavelength. I mean, are you a math geek? Tell us more about what your interests are and how you tie that into your career.
Yes, I am a huge math geek. Absolutely. I'm pretty much kind of like an all-around geek. So that's one of the things I love about Work Trends, which is it's such a great place to geek out about all things HR and people related. But yes, I've always loved math. I've always loved analytics. And I just feel like the thing that I love about making decisions with analytics is that it feels like it's a more fair and consistent way to make decisions. And so if you can tell me what the rationale is or how to build a business case, then I know exactly what's required. And it feels like we're all kind of on the same page versus something that's more political or something where, you know, certain people are making the decisions and it's more opaque. I love that part of the math of evening the playing field.
That's so awesome. And thank you for saying that about Work Trends. Myself and the community, we're definitely geeky and we're unapologetic about it, right? Why, you know, I mean, like it is what it is. We are who we are. And I think that's today's message, right? You can be who you are. You can be a math geek and still find a career in HR. That's the refreshing part, right? And I think there's more of these roles that are really popping up all over the world at this point. So these are exciting times.
Completely agree. Yeah. With you. And I love the way you talk about the community. I mean, I think that's really what this is. And we see this in a lot of different ways, podcasts for kind of every different kind of interest. It's so cool to be able to make those communities and really go deep with people on things that you care about.
Well, and I think community is so often missing still for podcasts and vendors out there. I think that's what we have here at Talent Culture, and we've been working at it for many, many years. And I think that it's one thing to have a podcast, but it's another thing to build a community. In order to build a community, you have to be willing to kind of take those chances and be dedicated to bringing people together around topics. So I appreciate that. I appreciate you saying that. And I know the community does as well. And we're excited to unpack this with you on Twitter, by the way. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I agree.
So you've spent the past few years thinking about HR effectiveness, both at Gartner and now at LinkedIn. How have you seen HR start to use data to drive better outcomes?
I think that's a great question. And it's really been interesting, I would say, kind of over the past 15 years to see this HR effectiveness, people analytics discipline emerge. And sort of following, I would say, in the footsteps of something like marketing, where 20 years ago, maybe 30 years ago, there was an inability to measure ROI in marketing. And I think recruiting and HR more broadly has learned from that journey and really begun to close the gap with marketing. Although it's really interesting, I read recently in a Deloitte study that only 8% of companies feel like they have usable data about talent. So there's still a long way to go, even though I'd say we're about 15 years into this journey.
Why do I feel like we always are talking more about it, and then we get down to the nitty gritty in the data, and we're like, 8%?
I know.
That just seems ridiculous to me.
I know. I saw that this week and I almost fell out of my chair. It's a little bit daunting, I would say, to see that. But, you know, I hope and I believe that we have a really high bar for the data that we use in HR. I think nothing's really more important than our people data. And so I think this may be the reflection of a high bar. And I think what is really interesting and really new and exciting is that we're answering more important problems than we ever have before. So once again, I think that causes us to question our data and really demand quite a bit in terms of accuracy, consistency, reliability. And so in a recent survey that LinkedIn did, we do an annual global recruiting trends survey, and we ask recruiting leaders specifically about the trends that they're most interested in for hiring and talent acquisition. And we see diversity as number one. We see transformation of the interview process as number two. Data-driven recruiting is number three. And then we've got the gig economy and artificial intelligence as four and five. So really interesting to see that things like artificial intelligence make that list of like the really important trends that people care about. But I love that diversity is number one, and that people are really thinking about how we can make this or make our organizations stronger. We all know that diversity leads to stronger performance. How we can do that through recruiting and then throughout the entire HR cycle. So solving more important problems than ever is a huge piece of what people analytics and HR effectiveness is allowing us to do.
I think it's really cool. Diversity came in at 78%, by the way, everyone. That's and artificial funny. Intelligence was at 33%. You know, speaking of community, I'm not a big fan of silos, but HR is still pretty siloed, right?
Yes, I completely agree with that. And I think, you know, we've seen that play out in the data story as well. So it used to be, and I think I actually heard this on your podcast, that it used to be that Comp and Ben was the only place where you would really find great, rich data in HR. And then it started kind of expanding to recruiting. And then you'd always have, you know, the go-to metrics like percent open headcount, time to fill, things like that. Now I see data is starting to pervade the rest of HR, and that's a huge step forward. It's really exciting to see. But I agree with you. I think the next frontier is breaking down those silos and thinking about this, not just kind of like, first we recruit you, and then we onboard you, and then we make sure your rewards are what they should be, and then we train you and things like that. But actually this entire end-to-end journey that you're thinking about it all at once and how this ties together. So I'm excited about the frontier that we're embarking on, but I think there's a lot of work to do to get to a non-siloed approach.
If I tell you that I think what you said is really sexy, will you think I'm geeky? Because I mean, really, that was like the sexiest thing I've heard all day.
That's awesome. Well, it's early, but
all right. I need more coffee over here.
But no, I mean, if you're talking about geeking out over HR data,
yeah, right?
you've got a partner in crime right here.
All right. Well, you know, the way HR organizations use data, it's really fascinating to me because it's changing really fast, right? So, yeah. What do you think has changed the most, say, in the past 5 or 10 years?
So it's really interesting. I'd go back to this analogy of kind of people analytics learning from the marketing function in our organizations. And I oversee marketing insights as well as our people insights. So I'm able to see that. And I think what's really interesting is that we're closing the gap. People insights, talent insights is closing the gap to the other functions and has more of a seat at the table than it ever has before. And so I just read something McKinsey has been talking about, how the CHRO and the CFO and the CEO need to work together as a group of three to really think about how to implement change in their organization, how to implement successful strategy. And I love that idea about forward thinking and people first organizations working in that way. So I think the seat at the table is probably the thing that I've seen change the most. And now I'm starting to hear trends in marketing that remind me of things I've heard in people analytics, which is really cool how we've kind of come full circle. And so what's really hot in marketing now more than ever is this idea of relevance. So shifting from reach to relevance. It's not about how many eyeballs you've reached with your message. It's about the ones that you want to reach and about how relevant your message is to that audience that you're reaching. And I think we've been talking about that in talent for some period of time, certainly in recruiting, right? So you don't post and pray. You don't just hope that a million people apply to any job opening that you have. You want to make sure that the right people are applying, people who you are going to find are successful for your organization, but in turn, they're also going to want to join your organization.
You know, I'm kind of chuckling over here because I think we're still talking about the seat at the table, which kind of makes me laugh. Can't we come up with a new phrase? Love you, but we got to come up with something new. Does anyone else out in the Work Trends community think so? What's a better opportunity for us to talk about bringing HR in as business decision makers? We don't have to answer that right now, by the way. That's the good news. But let's think about that, because you're right, Kate. I think we can relate to that term, but I think it's bigger than that. So I'm just throwing it out there to the Work Trends community hashtag. Give us your answers when you get a second over there. Okay.
I love that. That's a great point. I mean, I do feel like the reason that seat at the table has resonated is because you know, the Sheryl Sandberg example of her sort of coming in as a more junior person into a meeting and taking a seat that is quite literally not at the table. Yeah. And so that image has worked, but I agree with you. Like, we have been talking about this too long, and if the CHRO is literally not at the table, then you've got bigger problems.
Yeah. Like, so you have a culture problem. Like, let's like boil this down to what the issue really is. But I think it's really cool that people analytics is getting mainstream.
I completely agree with you. Yeah. I think that everybody should be thinking about their people in terms of what the measurements are that indicate the health. And you talked about a culture problem. How do you measure culture? How do you make sure that you have the culture that you want on your team and in your organization? And it's not enough to sort of speak an anecdote. I think anecdote can be really powerful, but you've got to be able to look at an overall health index.
I know you're looking at how HR can use data to address important problems like, say, the gender gap in leadership roles. Hint, yep. To everybody out there. Tell us more about this. I think it's really interesting.
Oh, is there a gender gap in leadership roles?
I know, yeah.
So anyone?
Hello, Bueller, anyone?
You know what I think is really cool is that we've always known that there was an issue in terms of gender gap in leadership. And what I think the big step forward is that we're able to quantify it. And that's allowing us to do all kinds of things toward solving it. We're nowhere near solving it yet, but we're starting to quantify the problem, have a sense of how large it is, have a sense of the opportunity. So looking at some of the metrics of what happens when you do have a gender balanced organization, or underrepresented minorities are more well represented in your organization, and link that to performance outcomes. So tons and tons of data and analysis around that. So I think it's understanding where we are, creating the platform to enact programs to really change that. Those are the two pieces that I think are new and exciting. In Burson's most recent report, he cited some of these ideas of like underrepresentation of women in engineering in Silicon Valley, gender pay inequity, and things like that, and said, actually, this is kind of an indication that we're moving in the right direction because we know about this. The fact that we're talking about this, the fact that we're having this conversation is a reflection of people analytics.
What about public policy that's actually holding us accountable?
That's
for
exactly
some of this
right.
too. I mean, like, it's not just about us, it's about we, and it's about who's not holding up their end of the bargain. And those people who are not are being called out now.
I think that's exactly right. Yeah. In the UK, now they're asking, or they're requiring companies to publish the gender pay gap. And first of all, you can only do that when you have robust analytics, right? In order to publish what that is and analyze what that is. And then secondly, now that that's out in the public, what are you going to do about it? So I agree with you. It is a we. How do we all work together to address this? And the expectations are higher than they ever have been. We know this is correlated with better success. So as a shareholder, as a stakeholder, what are we doing to improve that balance?
What about building a more diverse workforce? How can HR teams use data to actually eliminate bias in hiring?
So this is something I'm super passionate about, which is this idea of bias in hiring. It is so pervasive. And it's really interesting when you look at it and look at some of the data that we see around biases in hiring. And again, back to anecdotes, I can remember in early days of people analytics, having hiring managers tell me that they only wanted to hire Division I athletes because they were Division I athletes. They knew that correlated with success, that made them tough. And they thought, you know, toughness is required in this role. So I only want to see Division I athletes. And I think what we've been able to do with analytics and data is start to unpack a little bit more about what is it that you're solving for. If you're solving for toughness, if you're solving for grit, there's more than one way to skin that cat. There's more than one way to find grit than just that Division I varsity letter. And starting to think about, well, were you in ROTC in college? Because I'd be willing to bet that you're pretty gritty if you were in ROTC in college. There are so many different ways to do it. And I think that really helps, number one, surface the bias, right? We're saying, okay, I see what the conversation is. Let's talk a little bit more about how we can find what you're actually looking for. So number two, solve that bias by finding different routes and making sure that we can open up the aperture for the types of people that we're hiring.
Well, and what about job descriptions? I think this is a huge point of leverage. How is that working into how companies are recruiting?
Well, I think one of the things that is really interesting in job descriptions, and I've been actually working on this with my team, ourselves, for the people that we're hiring, is what is it that you need to hire for? What has to be there versus what will they gain or what could they gain once they're on the job? And so, whereas we used to hire for specific soft skills and really be quite rigorous in terms of our technical requirements, we've been able to build some onboarding trainings and sort of ongoing trainings in some of our coding languages and things like that. And now what we're doing is we're hiring much more for this sort of, I would say, adaptability, intellectual curiosity, drive, some of these things that you can prove in or you can demonstrate in a lot of different types of careers and backgrounds. So that's allowing us to get much more into a diverse teams, bring a lot of different thinking, a lot of different approaches to the team. It's been really eye-opening for us.
I really like the fact that we can actually utilize this too. I mean, that's the whole point of us having data, right?
I completely agree. I mean, I think that's, you know, if you look at any kind of analytics maturity model, the first piece is like descriptive, where it's sort of like, what is the problem? And I think that's sort of where we are in diversity, hopefully getting a bit past it, but we're at least describing the problem. And then I think bringing yourself to action and changing outcomes based on that data is the next phase in the maturity model. And so it's really encouraging to see a number of places where we really are getting to that.
One big theme I'm hearing a lot about right now and sort of pondering is this whole idea of hiring for current skills versus hiring for potential. Where do you land in this argument?
Yeah, that is the argument that we make. I mean, I think the shelf life of skills is so short right now. It's a matter of how do we think about making the right hires to solve for what our long-term needs are on the team and more broadly across the organization to hire for potential. And so that, you know, once again, if I had hired maybe 2 years ago, I would have said SQL coding is the number one skill that I need on the team. And I much more think potential. So what is this person going to come in and be able to learn right away? And then what other jobs at this company or what other projects at this company are we going to want them to lean in on? And that's beyond my team, beyond their first hiring manager. So I'm thinking much more long term about how to think about that. That curiosity that's going to keep people really hungry to learn more and contribute.
I am so on the fence about this. I got to be honest with you, just because there's such a piece of me that always wants to hire for soft skills actually first. But in the realm of digital media and marketing, well, I'll use that as an example, right? I do some hiring around that for my own media outlet. It's tough because there are concrete analytical skills that are needed. And some people just aren't interested in it. So again, I go back and forth on this, Kate. So it's really interesting to hear your viewpoint. And I think we're still, you know, we're still sort of looking at, you know, what is the best way to look at current skills versus hiring?
Yeah, well, for me, I mean, there's very much a portfolio approach. And so I couldn't, you know, hire, my team's about 150 people. I couldn't hire all 150 people. No. Super hungry, but lacking in technical skills, right, and just start from zero. So I think it's being thoughtful about where you can take an intelligent risk and say, you know, this is one individual who brings a brand new perspective to us, but we're going to need to do some upskilling on the technical piece. And I think if you do have a team, you can balance that and you can think about it. But I agree with you. It's not ignoring the hard skills piece, but it's making sure that you're thinking about the entire portfolio.
And making sure that they're onboarded well too, right? I mean, if they're not there 4 months after you hire them, what's the point?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, that's another strong interest for me is the whole onboarding discussion, because I think it needs to get better. And I think we need to be better at knowing, you know, 90 days in, if we're actually having a good culture fit, right? A good mesh with any particular candidate.
Yep.
So
for me and for my team, I keep coming back to those soft skills that I think, you know, where I've seen 90 days in not working is where somebody isn't kind of that curiosity, that hunger to kind of continue to learn more, where they want to be able to say, it's done, I've checked the box. Yep. I want sort of to get an A+ for that. The people who have done really well and have continued to thrive on the team and take on more are the people who are sort of like, what's next? Or I did that analysis, but it made me wonder about this next question. So they find themselves kind of chasing down answers that they haven't, to questions they haven't even been asked.
Well, and data is allowing us to look at our own potential.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's very sexy.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you mean as individuals and as organizations?
Yeah. I truly believe that we're all individuals first, mm-hmm. and then we take our individual into an organization. So if we're not working on the I, we can't be working on the we.
Mm-hmm.
That's my POV.
Yeah. You know?
And I think it's constantly evolving right now. So we're all under pressure to look within first, you know?
Yeah.
So I was in Vegas back in May at Unleash. And it was really fun. And we heard a lot about building trust. And I know that's a theme you're thinking a lot about too, mm-hmm. as am I. Mm-hmm. When you manage so much data, like LinkedIn does, or like any HR department does for that matter, how can you make sure you're handling it responsibly and earning your employees and customers' trust?
Yeah, it's a great point. It's something that is truly on my mind every day, and has been since I started in this function of people analytics. I think there's no more sensitive and important data than people's careers and their performance. And so I take very seriously the data that we have access to and the trust that our members put in us, as well as the companies that we work with. There's a ton of trust there. And we talk about it a lot. So I genuinely have not gone a day at LinkedIn where I haven't had a conversation about members first. And members first is a value that we talk a lot about, which is we began as a network platform that was members connecting with members. And without that, without members connecting with members, without members engaging, LinkedIn isn't really worthwhile. It's not a worthwhile place to spend time. And so it's hugely important, hugely valuable to us. And I always say to my team that with great data comes great responsibility. And I just think about how do we live up to that every day? And I think the biggest piece is believing that members first tenet to our core and talking about it a lot and encouraging that conversation of, is that members first? And let's talk about how we can be more members first. Having that conversation, I think, is really valuable.
I'm glad you are. And being transparent with you, I think, you know, every organization is sort of working towards that. I'm going to take a sidebar with you for a minute and ask you something. What in the world is going on with LinkedIn groups? Do you have any skinny for us on that?
I actually don't have a lot of insight there. I can find out and follow up with you.
Yeah, find out and follow up with us, would you? We'll unpack it further because I'm like wondering. It's like that dot, dot, dot thing going, what is happening there?
Yeah.
Just curious.
Yeah, I will.
So speaking of tech and sort of new things, we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk specifically about trends that you are excited about right now. What's unfolding for you?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've spent a lot of time talking about diversity and unconscious bias, and that is a place where I am super excited about the potential to lean in and help solve some of those opportunities. I think for me, I've been reading Burson's most recent report and spending a lot of time on that, and I love this idea of team management. So rather than just, you know, managing to the individual or managing to the project, sort of thinking about these teams and how they can work together. And I think there's a lot more flexibility in that idea. So instead of hiring an employee to work in one department for their entire career, thinking about that agility and how we can all kind of come together and manage to specific goals and then create mobility for talent across the organization. So I think that talks a lot to this idea of like retention and long-term health of the organization and breaking down silos, you know, if you have that talent mobility. So that's something I'm super excited about.
I'm excited about it too, but I'm also a little worried about these numbers we see of more and more workers being remote and how that's going to actually come to fruition. When you start looking at the numbers, more and more of us are flexible and working remotely.
Personally, super empowered by that because I find that it allows me. So I work from home 2 days a week and I am in the office 3 days a week.
Oh, okay.
And I find that there's a balance there that I am actually excited for my commutes on the day that days that I do commute because I think it's a great time to sort of decompress and, you know, catch up on podcasts, et cetera.
Yeah. But I have a question for you. Which days? Yeah. Do you have like a set of days or tell us just little bit more about a day in the life of Kate?
Yeah. So typically I work from home on Tuesdays and Fridays. I love the Tuesday break. It's kind of like you hit the ground running on Monday. You're in the office having great conversations. And then Tuesday you can sort of catch up and reflect a little bit on that. And then I'm back in on Wednesday and Thursday and then usually work from home on Fridays unless there's some sort of team event. And then, you know, there's a fair amount of travel in my role because it is a global team. And so I want to stay in touch with the team and make sure we're having some face-to-face time. But I find that it's a really great balance. Again, like the face-to-face with the team as well as the video conferencing, where as a company, LinkedIn is super committed to video conferencing. And I just think, you know, back to some of the conversations we've had, I think it opens up huge talent pools to say to somebody, we're going to kind of find the common ground between where you are and where your life is and where our work is happening to engage with candidates you might not otherwise be able to do.
Absolutely. I'm totally with you. And it just refreshes your mind, right? I'm all about like, I'm on a health and well-being kick these days, both personally and just, I'm really fascinated with some of the tech around that personally, as it relates to individuals and engagement as well. But, you know, I have a burning question.
Yes.
How do you keep learning? What are you reading, watching, listening to? Tell us.
So I actually do use that long commute that I mentioned to stay current. And so I this is not sort of kissing up. I truly enjoy Work Trends and just feel like it is so cool that there are places where people who are passionate about a subject can go to nerd out. And it, you know, we don't have to fly at 30,000 feet or 50,000 feet. And we don't have to be kind of controversial to get people to, you know, click in. We can just really go deep on topics that we care deeply about. So I've loved this podcast and many others.
Oh, thank you so much. That means the world to me. Seriously. That's awesome. And I didn't even pay you to say that. That's the cool part. We didn't even tee this up.
That's right. That's right. And then some of the podcasts that I love How I Built This with Guy Raz. I'm just like, I love hearing about those journeys of how founders have created their companies and some of the, he really dives into some of the, what I would call crucible moments. So some of those moments that are just the toughest and you don't know if you can keep going or not, they're down to their last $500 and, you know, now super successful CEOs. So I love that. I love the balance of personal and career discussion. I read Dealbook every day, the email from the New York Times, the Sorkin email, and I just feel like it is a great, it does fly pretty high, 30,000 feet, but then you can dig in on the topics that you really enjoy. And I feel like that keeps me really sharp on people trends, because it relates so directly. It's just about every story I find a people angle on it, even though it's, you know, considered a financial digest. I really can find a people angle on in that. And I love where those two places meet.
Well, I love where all this is going. And I want to thank you for stopping by today, Kate.
Oh, yeah, this has been my pleasure. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks for listening to Work Trends from Talent Culture. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And I'd be really grateful if you took a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes. It helps other people find our show. If you know someone who would enjoy listening, please share it with them. You can learn more about the future of work at talentculture.com.